Welcome to Intimacy Choreography in Conversation, where Anne and Carly talk candidly about the growing world of intimacy choreography and shifting performing art spaces toward a culture of consent.
We acknowledge and honor the Tongva peoples as the traditional caretakers of the land we currently reside on and are recording this podcast on. That is the Los Angeles Basin and South Channel Island.
Hi, Anne.
Hello.
So what are we talking about today?
Today we are going to talk about intimacy in career. How to get a job working in intimacy. That's what we're talking about.
Oh, I love this topic. I'm super excited to talk about it with you. And we have some great questions.
So shall we get into it?
Absolutely.
Okay. I'll ask the first question.
Okay.
How did you start working in the field? What inspired you to do this work?
Oh, cool. What a great question. I originally trained and started working in the theater as an actor. And so that was kind of my way into directing. And as an actor, I had a lot of frustrations about how actors were treated, how rehearsal rooms were run. And then I started directing and was like, ah, and it just kind of clicked and made sense. And as a director, I've always been really interested in stories that explore sexuality. And a lot of times exploring kind of the wounds we collective humans have around that, because I think that's an important place to start to try to heal those wounds, is to explore them in story on our stages. And so in that work, I've always been somebody who really prioritizes taking care of my actors in doing work where, like, a practice that I do for years, even before I had language, like de-rolling or closure, is to just do rehearsals where we start with agreements and we do check-ins and check-outs and take kind of some extra special time when we're doing the more charged scenes. So then when I found out, started hearing that intimacy direction was a field, it was at the same time that I had just started working as, or had been for a few years working as a sex educator as well. And so I have a level of comfort communicating about consent and sexuality. And so when I found out this new field had a name and it was starting to crystallize into a specific role, it was another moment of like, where a lot of stuff clicked and I really felt called to do this work and to blend together the different skills and passions I had to hone it and just keep focusing on it and getting better and sharing these practices with other folks is the long and short of it.
That's great. You know, we have similar backgrounds. I started as an actor, and in university, I kept running up against directors that were inappropriate. A lot of my professors, long gone now, were dating the students and having interactions with the students that were inappropriate. And it became a part of the culture of our department, even though it was very, very small. And we were very, very active. There was just this kind of blight on the department. And then the AIDS crisis hit. And in our very, very small department of about 50 majors, we lost 14 of our students in about 18 months. Wow. So as we worked through all of that, we found that it was difficult to do scenes that had intimate content or touching. And so I was hell-bent on devising a system where people felt safe with touch and people felt safe giving their consent and stating their boundaries. So I developed this little system that I use and have used for a long time. Since those days, called Circles of Intimacy. And so I was really very interested in plays that had sexual content. And so I used that system, and, you know, it's gotten me here. When I heard about intimacy direction surfacing as part of the industry, I was immediately drawn to it. And that's what got me here today. So that's kind of the long and the short of it.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing.
Thanks.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting that we both kind of have this original background in the theater as actors and seeing and feeling things that we're like, that's not right, or that doesn't feel like safe or the best way to work. I think it is really powerful to have the experience of being an actor. I just slight tangent. I think like all directors should act in something at some point in their lives, just because we're asking folks to do some really vulnerable work. And I think it can make a difference when you've experienced that, like physically in your body, in your voice.
Wow. That is really good advice. But, you know, that's a great suggestion. And I really 100% believe that. And, you know, in the patriarchal system that we have in theater, I think it's really beholden to people moving into direction that they should feel what it feels like to be directed. I couldn't agree more.
I think a lot about my time as an actor and how much that shaped my work, especially in intimacy direction. And just, I also remember being in school and finding myself in some situations, but even more seeing friends of mine in situations where I didn't have the language then about consent and boundaries to name like why this feels wrong and not right to be asking actors. But I just saw people that I loved doing what they loved, but in a context that was really like toxic and was asking them to go too far in a lot of ways that compromised mental and physical health. And, you know, some of them aren't actors anymore. And that's just a huge fire of my passion in why I became a director and intimacy director. I love actors, and I really want to make rooms where that doesn't happen, where that's a safe space or a brave space.
Yeah, I love that idea of brave space. You know, it's one of our, I don't know, theories in intimacy coordinators of color, is that we want the space to be brave, and we want everyone when they walk into the room to be respected and to be cherished, really, because we're asking actors to live our dreams and make them come true on stage. And a lot of respect has gone away from the actor. They're kind of like the last thing that gets considered. And even me saying thing, it's like they're human beings. And, you know, they've spent time and money and effort and emotion all on creating their craft. And I think we should just honor that and get back to placing the actors in a very cared for space.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And that's not, I don't know, I know there's definitely some pushback in this field, I think, for especially folks who don't really know what it entails, but just about like, oh, is that, you know, too coddling to the actors and you just have to like toughen up and get through it. And I think that's like such a toxic attitude, because we're asking actors to hold these story and characters and do this work in their bodies, in their literal human bodies. And if we don't name that and make sure that's taken care of, some bad shit can happen. And that's not what we want when we're making art.
So true. So true.
I have another question for you.
All right.
And this is a wonderful question that I think you and I have both been asked in lots of different times and ways. Do you think that the intimacy director and the director of a production need to be two separate people? Or do you feel like a director trained in this work is able to act as both?
Wow. I think yes and no. Okay. So I feel that directors moving forward, because actors are changing. Younger actors coming out of master's programs, moving into their career after undergraduate or not going to school and really having a passion for their work, they are a different generation. All right. These kids coming now respect their boundaries. and they know about consent, and they're less afraid to say no than ever before. So if you can, as a director, get some kind of leg up on consent and boundaries. You know, there are a lot of directors in academia who've been in academia for 20 years, 30 years. You know, you see the image of this professor with all these books behind him or her, and they're full of knowledge and all of this, but they haven't quite kept up with the contemporary study form of what it means to work with actors of collegial age or collegiate age. So if, you know, TIE is doing this, they are asking directors, people who work with students in academia, to come in, take some preliminary training, get best practices under their belt, get consent and boundaries under their belt. You can choreograph the way you want to choreograph, but how do you notate that to the stage manager? How do you convey that? It's important to have an intimacy call, just as important as it is to have a fight call.
Yes. So
it's all these things that are new and fresh that will accommodate healthy practices for actors coming now that they will demand. And I'm on their side. I think they should demand that of their professors and their instructors. I think they should demand that respect when they walk into a room, simply because they're human beings that have the ability to create our vision. Now, if you need to call in an intimacy director, that's a completely different ball of wax. I say yes. Generally speaking, if a play has sexual content or content with sexual violence, and if the budget is there, if the content requires it, if there have been problems in the cast or with the leadership before with content like this, absolutely, the producers need to understand that having an intimacy, a qualified intimacy coordinator or director in the room, is going to save them a lot of trouble. Because that's what we're trained to do, is to make sure that everyone is on the same train and we leave the station and we get to the destination enthusiastically whole.
Yes, I wish I had a train whistle that I could blow right now. David probably David. Has that sound effect.
David.
that's so well said. I'm totally on the same page. And I think that this is a very situational question. Mm-hmm. I agree that all directors should just have a foundational knowledge of how to navigate consent and boundaries in their space. And then I think there's a few other questions to ask yourself if you need to bring in an intimacy director, if you already, as a director, feel confident on handling consent and boundaries and choreography. I think there's a few different things. One, or as you've mentioned, if there have been issues in the company or the school department or, you know, that specific context before, then I think it's absolutely really essential to bring in an intimacy director. I think if the content, the intimate content of simulated sex, nudity, sexual violence, especially more intense or charged content, I think it depends on a lot of things. I would say if you are able to, especially if you have the budget, you should bring someone in. And if, depending on your comfort level as the director with that content, like, for instance, if you're staging a BDSM or kinky sex scene specifically, and you're like, I don't know if I can authentically tell the story or exactly what that entails, then bring in an intimacy director who has that knowledge. Or if you are like, I don't know if I have the capacity to hold space for what might come up for the action, for the actors in this scene of sexual violence, bring in an intimacy director. It never hurts to bring in an intimacy director, I will say. And as Anna's mentioned before, we're not the sex police, and we're not here to like co-opt this, you know, climactic moment in this scene. It's more like someone else to be on your team who offers a very specific set of skills, and to be another person who the actors might feel comfortable going to. Because like, especially in maybe a university setting, what if you as the director are also giving the student their grade for the show? Then that adds just another level of power dynamic in which the student, you know, might have less comfort or confidence in going to you or even the stage manager about something that they're feeling anxious about the scene. Having another person who this is their specialty can really reduce a lot of and prevent a lot of harm and even a lot of, you know, discomfort or shyness in the actor's approach to the work.
Agreed. Agreed. It's always good to have us, but it's also good to up your game and get some professional development around intimacy. I don't think it could hurt at all. Either one.
Yeah. Yeah. And I definitely want to acknowledge that I know not every theater production necessarily has the budget, but I think that something is better than nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I look at this through a harm reduction lens in terms of like, educate yourself as a director. That's better than not having that knowledge and any of those skills. Hire a newer intimacy, you know, director or somebody who is able to work for cheaper after you've, you know, had a conversation and vetted them and made sure they're a good fit and are qualified, rather than maybe hiring the most expensive intimacy director if that's not in your budget. Like, something is better than nothing is, I think, how I feel about that.
All right. Are we ready for the next question?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, are we?
Yeah.
Where do you think the greatest demand for this role will come from in the future?
Ooh, interesting. Well, I think it's first going to come from the film world, because I just think there's more money in the film world for this than in the theater world. But I think that's also something that you can speak on better than myself. So I would love to hear your thoughts on this.
I really think that intimacy is growing into its toddlerhood now.
Yeah.
It's learning to take steps away from its originators and move into a new space where inclusivity and attention to more than just maybe sexual content, or in addition to sexual content, there might be a racial situation. I'll give you an example. I was just asked, I guess about 3 weeks ago, to come onto a film in Georgia, shooting in Georgia, at a plantation where a female identifying Black woman was going to be sexually violated by a male oriented white person. And so I kind of questioned the line producer who called me, and I said, well, not only is this a sexual situation, but it's also a racial situation. So what are we going to be doing to care for these actors in that regard? And they kind of stopped in their tracks and said, I didn't think about that. I said, yeah, I mean, people really don't think about it. And I think as this industry grows and as more stories come through Hollywood and come through theater in the nation, that these stories are going to be more and more complicated when it comes to age, race, cultural, and ability. I just think that there is a great way to evolve into absorbing these different delineations when it comes to sexual situations. And that's very, very exciting. And I think that's where we're headed.
Yeah. I think that's a really great direction to head. And that's really important that if this movement is really about protecting in caring for actors and taking care of their mental health and their physical safety and their just overall wellness so that they can do their best work, that we can't ignore the intersectional components of that.
Yeah.
I'm excited for the future possibilities of doing better, of the industry becoming better than it has been.
Because when you know better,
you do better.
All right. Okay. I also wanted to bring up that SAG-AFTRA, in January of this year, 2020, they put out a series of guidelines for intimacy coordination the intimacy coordinators that they want to use have to go by these certain guidelines, much like fight choreographers and fight coordinators that they mm-hmm. that they support. And it's great. It's very well outlined. But I think one thing kind of that sparks my joy and interest is getting racial training, racial sensitivity training, and cultural bias training on that list. They are not on there unless they edited it since I talked to SAG-AFTRA, which was, you know, about 3 months ago. In March.
It hasn't been updated.
So I don't know if they have changed that yet, but it was a glaring misstep, I think. And hopefully they have added those things because, you know, if sexual harassment's on there and mental health and first aid is on there,
right,
I think we should be paying attention to racial sensitivity and cultural bias as well.
It has not been updated.
Thank you.
Since January. Yeah, January is the latest update they've done on it.
Mm.
Thank you, Hazel.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's really an essential piece that is missing. Mm-hmm. That folks should have that if they're doing this work, and which is working with actors in some of their most vulnerable moments.
Right. And we'll be putting that link. We can post that link, right, Hazel? Somewhere.
Yeah, I'll be putting links in the show notes. Wherever the transcript gets published, the show notes will also be there.
Thank you. You're amazing. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Next question.
Yes. Yes, let's do that. So our next question is, what are the types of resistance that you get when you try to do your job in rehearsals, and from who? And what are your ways for dealing with them? What would you recommend to other intimacy directors to consider?
That's great. I think the thing that comes to mind the most, and I think we are trying to change that as we speak through actors' equity, is this idea of this blood-curdling schedule that we're on.
Mm.
Time. Everybody is rushing through. Everybody is trying to make deadlines of when, you know, of that opening night. 10 out of 12 hours of work, if you've never done it, it is exhausting. And, you know, I was reading this article about members of the technical union, IATSE, and what they're having to come up against is sometimes working 80 to 90 hour weeks.
Oof.
Normal 80 to 90 yeah. hour weeks.
It's inhumane.
Right. And there's a little bit of a content warning here talking about the safety of IATSE members, but some of them have died because they've fallen asleep at the wheel going home. So this is a really big problem. And if we can pull back these producers on this sweatshop idea of cranking out all of these productions in such a harried time. And you know, it's just not humanly conceivable that actors will give 20 years of their lives doing, you know, being at this schedule, missing family engagements, missing their children grow up, missing holidays, missing, you know, all the important things that make us human, to be a part of this machine. And so to me, that is one of the main things that I face, is that everyone is in a rush. And so when you get to tech rehearsal and that person is actually showing their skin in a nudity scene, maybe the first time, that we need to put a bubble around that person and respect that moment and give those actors the respect that they deserve for what they're willing to give in order to make everybody look good. That's my main thing. It's like, we need to slow the hell down. The process is too fast. It's killing people. It's unhealthy, and we're missing our lives. So
that's beautiful. And that's so right on. I love the connection of resistance to this work is kind of connected to this scarcity mindset that the entertainment industry and the world at large operates, where there's never enough time, there's never enough space, there's never enough money. And yeah, I think that the powerful switching of the mindset where, cool, we're going to value humans, the humans who are the artists that we're creating with, over a time crunch and a hustle grind schedule, can do wonders to shift the mentality. If we're like, okay, we have to make time for this work because it's essential.
Not to mention university.
Yes.
You know, where you're not being paid, but you have paid these professors and, you know, the design faculty and everybody, and you've given your money to them, and then you're being rushed through a situation that may be your first time being nude in front of another human being.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really delicate. And I just hope that this generation coming through now stands up and says, look, we're going to need a little bit of time.
Yes. I think that from my recent pre-pandemic experience and working with college students in this work, and even some high schoolers, that they are hip to consent and boundaries, mm-hmm. and they latch onto it, they get it, or already with it, and are okay asking for that. And I think giving permission is a really powerful thing. I think that's a big part of intimacy work, is to give folks permission to ask for what they need. But I think especially this next up and coming generation is very much ready to say yes to that permission. In my work with intimacy, I have not met that much resistance, though of course, doing the actual, like working on a production, that's kind of already getting in the door. There's enough people who are saying yes to just bring me into the room. But occasionally there is resistance. There might be a director or even just like one or two actors in the cast who don't really buy in as much. And I think my best advice for dealing with resistance is to invite those people in to be on the same team as you. To almost like talk in the we and just invite them to already be on the same side, that we all want to make this production the best it can be. We all want to create some great art and make great acting scenes in productions together. And we want to respect and take care of each other throughout the process as best we can, so that we're really able to be present and bring our all. And that is the way I have most successfully in the past kind of pulled in people to this way of rehearsing.
I love it.
Yeah. Instead of being like, you know, instead of creating the separation of, it's like, you're against this, just be like, I know you want to make good art, and I know you want to take care of the people in your cast. So here's an invitation to do that better.
Excellent. Excellent. I love what you just said about talking the we.
Yeah.
Talking in the we. I love that. And Number one, it quells the power dynamic. And it also says, hey, look, I'm the ID, I'm the IC on this. Here are three different ways this can go. These are three different ideas I have. Pick one. So that the director is not feeling pigeonholed into your one vision, that they have kind of a menu of ideas that you can develop. And I think it's also really good for us as intimacy directors, coordinators, to have several different options that we could help to create so that the directors don't feel like we're trying to boss them around or that we don't respect what they want to be seen with their vision. And, you know, talking in the we, like, we can do this, we could do this, we could do this, or we could do this. I love that.
Yes. And I think there's, you know, talking in the I is very important in a lot of situations, especially when communicating your needs, your boundaries, your experience, your feelings. We don't want to assume what other folks are experiencing. But I think this is a specific way of inviting collaboration. And just as you said, letting the director know, I'm on your team. I'm a member of your team to help you realize your vision. I'm not coming in to impose my vision. I'm just here to bring in some ideas, some practical tools, some language, and some options that can empower you and your actors to make this moment the best that it can be, and one that they're able to do on either multiple takes on film or multiple nights in performance.
Love it. I love it.
Also, bringing this back to the amazing conversation that Anne had last week with Valerie Curtis Newton, where she was talking about resistance of bringing white intimacy directors into Black spaces or spaces that are mostly made up of people of color. And I think that's a completely valid resistance. I think that that is totally okay to say, I don't want to collaborate with a white intimacy director. And I think that's a great opportunity. One, it's part of why Anne's work with intimacy coordinators of color is so amazing. This is a field that at the moment and at its beginning has been mostly dominated by white women. And I think we are starting to change that through the work of Anne and other amazing folks. And I think that that's okay as a director to have boundaries, whether they're racial, gender, ability, or more. You know, if I am a white woman, and if I was an actor in a scene with sexual violence where my character was experiencing sexual violence from a male character and a male actor, I might not feel as comfortable or safe having a male intimacy director. Not that these are direct analogies, but just as like a personal example from my perspective. So I think that it's okay as an actor or a director to say, sure, I'm happy to collaborate and have this other artist in, but it's important for me that they are a woman or that they are Black or whatever fits the culture that you as the director feel is important to create with your cast in your rehearsal spaces as you develop and stage the story.
That's brilliant. I mean, I absolutely agree. You know, I'm going to go here and just say, I have a dream that one day we will be able to, the industry will be able to supply specific types of intimacy directors and coordinators that speak to the content of the play and the affinity space in the group. So, or the affinity space specific to the needs of the content. So, when we say we're moving into an all Black space and the request is there to have a Black intimacy director, I hope that we will be able to send them out all over the country instead of just one place, which is what it is right now.
Yeah.
So it's limited, and I think it's growing. And I think that as the industry grows to involve and include different walks of life, that we will enrich the intimacy and the relationships of theater companies all over the country. And certainly I feel that a director has the right to ask for specific type of intimacy coordinator, director that comes in. And as we move through the trainings and learning of how to do that, which we're going to start talking about in a moment, hopefully we will be able to feed the industry exactly what they need.
It's beautifully said. Yeah. And I also think that if, especially at this time where we're still in the growing process and there are not as many intimacy directors and coordinators of color currently in every city and space where there is theater happening, I think that, you know, it's totally within your right and your prerogative as a director to make that decision. Going back to the earlier question, does the director and intimacy director have to be two different people?
Right.
If this is a space where the whole team is Black and the only intimacy directors in your area that you can find in your budget are white, then I think that that's absolutely a time where you can be like, okay, as the director, I'm going to do some extra training and learning around this. Maybe I'll even consult a white intimacy director on the phone and talk to them and bounce some ideas off them. But that's a way to have them not actually physically come into the space and be working with the actors directly. Yeah. So I think there's lots of ways to be creative and to, as a director, to be allowed to have boundaries around who you bring in to work with these very vulnerable moments with your actors.
Yes, because that will create the brave space. That in itself will create a braver space. And it's so nuanced, and it's so on a molecular level different to have someone like you lead you through an intimate moment. It's just like a gossamer cobweb type of feel to have that alliance on a
amen gossamer.
Yeah. Gossamer. On that level. So I mean, it's really nuanced, and I can't wait for more people to move into this industry. So excited.
It's really exciting. The looking ahead to like kind of the next phase beyond the toddler phase, as you called it, of just over the next, like, especially 5 years, I'm just really excited to see how and who this industry blooms. All right. That concludes the first half of this two-part series of answering questions about training and career in intimacy choreography. We will see you again next week for part two that is very advice-focused. Excited to talk some more about that. If you listening right now, have any questions about intimacy choreography, direction, consulting, or just the intimacy field in general, please send them to our email, which is the letters icic.anneandcarly@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram at the letters icic_AnneandCarly, where we will be posting info about upcoming episodes and other intimacy-related tidbits.
And as usual, we'd also like to pop, pop, pop our sound designer, editor, and otherwise extraordinary person, David Gonzalez. And pop, pop, pop to our wonderful producer, Hazel Lozano. Music by David Gonzalez. The podcast logo is by Zach Brown.
Pop, pop.